Hi, you're listening to Petri.com's MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I am here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF Chat is going to be on Microsoft's love of developers. I think you've heard that somewhere before. My guest, hot off the Build 2021 conference speaking circuit, is Donovan Brown, who is the Partner Program Manager with Azure CTO Incubations. Hi, Donovan. Thank you so much for doing this chat with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We were talking just a moment ago. We've been planning this for a really long time, so I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Me too. A little funny story. I met Donovan crossing the street in Seattle. I think it was during a Build conference a few years ago. And I remember saying to you in the middle of the street, hey, I want to interview you someday. So here's someday. Someday is today.
I told that story not too long ago either, because I remember I said something like, I can't believe that person knew me. And then you said, everyone knows you. You're Rub DevOps on it. I'm like, oh my God. So I guess that's a thing.
Yep. But now you have a whole new job since that time. You're in part of Azure I don't really know, called CTO Incubation. So I'm guessing you work for Mark Rusinovich, who is the CTO of Azure. But could you tell us a little more about what do you do in your new job?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So you're absolutely right. So Mark Rusinovich is the CTO of Azure, and he has a team called his Incubations team, where we go off and take the feedback from our customers, from the community, and try to figure out how we can solve problems that are going to disrupt the industry. So these aren't adding features to existing products. This is, all right, this is a serious problem that if we solve it correctly, is going to change the way that people write software or use the cloud forever. And so one of the projects that we already released was Kata, which is a Kubernetes-based event-based autoscaler. So you can basically, instead of autoscaling off of CPU or memory, you can now autoscale off of the contents of a queue. So as the queue goes down to zero, Kata also allows you to scale down to zero, which most scalers don't allow you to do. And then as it starts to see items show up in the queue, it'll start to scale up the nodes necessary to process that queue. So that came out of the incubations team. And then Dapper is the newest thing that came out of the incubations team, which is making writing microservices really, really easy.
Good. I have a lot of Dapper questions coming up for you. One time I was interviewing Mark Rusinovich, and he started trying to explain Dapper to me, assuming that I know what things like the actor model are. And he's like, you know what that is, right? And I'm like, so no. And he's like, I know you know what that is. And I'm like, I'm not a developer, Mark. I don't know what it is. So yeah, but I'm going to ask you more about that in a bit.
Great.
But before I jump into my questions, we got a lot of interest on Twitter for this chat, which I wasn't surprised about. And some of these questions could be books in and of themselves. So I'm gonna try to skip around a little and do some serious questions and intersperse them with some fun questions to keep things light. Okay. So the very first one, let's just start with one that we got from several people. I think you saw this on Twitter. Taro Elhonen asked it very succinctly. He said, okay, GitHub or Azure DevOps? How is a developer going to decide?
That is the number one question I get asked every time I'm anywhere for any reason. They ask me, which one should I use? And I'll tell you the exact same thing I tell our customers. You need to evaluate them both because they both have their strengths and both have their weaknesses. And what you need to do is determine which one of them solves the problem that you're currently having. The best analogy I can think of, and I see this in my head every time someone asks me that question, is if you've ever worked with building a lot of things, you'll come across a screw where the head of it clearly is ready designed for a Phillips head screwdriver, which is the one that looks like an X. But if you look really closely at that screwdriver or that screw, the one of the lines goes all the way across the screw, which means you could also use a flathead screwdriver and still drive that screw. So there's no wrong answer. It's like, which one do you use? You know which one you're going to use. You're going to use the screwdriver that's closest to you. If you have a flathead that's closer to you than a Phillips head, you're going to use that flathead screwdriver and you're going to drive that screw. If you happen to have a Phillips head screwdriver, which would fit better and less likely to strip, you're going to use that one instead. And I use the same analogy when you're thinking about where should I do my CI/CD? Should it be in GitHub Actions or should it be inside of Azure DevOps? Well, which one's closest to you? And if your code is already in GitHub, the closest thing to you is going to be GitHub Actions. And what you need to do is evaluate that and say, does this have all the features that I need to achieve the goals that I currently have? And don't waste time talking about, oh, but it doesn't have this feature and that feature that you have no intentions of using. I used to hate that debate where people are like, oh, well, this one's best in class. And then I would ask you, what makes it best in class? They'd rattle off three or four features. I'm like, great. Which of those features are you planning to use? Well, none of them. It's like, so why are we talking about that?
Yeah.
Like, why are we wasting time? So stop looking at which one's the best in the industry, which one has the best XYZ. Look at the one that solves your problem the best. And that's what you need to be focused on. And we support them both. So there's no wrong answer. To me, this is a question of choice. And at Microsoft, we love giving our developers choice, which is why you have Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code, which is why you have the Azure CLI and Azure PowerShell. And this is why you have GitHub Actions and Azure DevOps, right? We give you options all across the board here at Microsoft. And this is just another example where we're giving you that. And we have features that just dropped in Azure DevOps on the 26th. What was that, yesterday, day before yesterday? So there's still development there. There's still active support there. So the first question I ask all my customers is, where is your source code? If it's in GitHub, fine. Let's go evaluate GitHub Actions and see if it does everything that you need. If two things, if your code one is not in Azure and GitHub, then GitHub Actions aren't an option. Or two, you found a feature that you really need that GitHub Actions doesn't have today. Well, then let's go ahead and switch over to Azure DevOps, which can get your code from anywhere and is older, so therefore has, by the nature of that, more features and has been battle tested and is used by companies of all sizes across the world. So, and we're still going to support it. We can't not support it because it's so popular, right? So like, to me, there's no wrong answer. You just need to find the one that fits your problem the best. And I use them both, just to be very transparent. There are projects where I'm still full blown Azure DevOps, and there's other projects where I've either migrated them or started from scratch and was able to achieve my desired goals in GitHub Actions. And it was convenient because all my code's pretty much in GitHub now anyway. So my answer is evaluate them both and choose the one that solves your problem the best.
That's a great answer. I'm like so happy to hear somebody give a succinct, clear answer to that, because I think the reason people ask it a lot is people are afraid that Azure DevOps is going to be discontinued. And so they're already panicking and way ahead of time. They're like, yeah, but what happens if Microsoft discontinues it because GitHub's the favorite child? And I'm like, you know what? They haven't said they're going to, and if they ever do, I'm sure they're going to give you a very long runway and a big heads up on that.
You nailed it. You just nailed it. And I, if you go through my Twitter feed, I think you'll find a response that was very similar to that. I said, stop listening to rumors. Wait till you get an official announcement from us. And look at TFVC, right? They had the exact, remember when we started investing in Git and people panicked about TFVC? And guess what? You can still use TFVC to this very day, right? Inside of our product. So I'm like, stop. I understand you don't want to invest in something that's going to be taking away from you. But this is just me. We don't do that with something as popular as Azure DevOps, right? It's just, we couldn't do that because it's so popular and it's such a great product. I'm obviously a huge fan. I was on the team for a while, so I'm a big fan of it as well.
Okay. Speaking of Git, you just gave me an excellent segue into the next listener question. Ian Sisis, I think is how he may pronounce his name, said, ask Donovan, what is the difference between DevOps and GitOps?
I'm going to try my best not to get on my soapbox about all the ops. I'm about sick of the ops. I mean, we don't need
all these. What about MLOps? What about this?
And DevSecOps, which I had a lot of talks on. And I don't even know if I ever said that term. If you notice, like, those are DevSecOps sessions, but I just said security. Because to me, you need security even before you're doing DevOps. You need security on your actual dev machine. You need to have that BitLockered and protected and multi-factor authentication. You need to have it in your repository, in your pipeline, and in production. To me, security is something that we should have been thinking about a long time, and I didn't need a special word to say it. For me, GitOps sounds a lot like infrastructure as code, but we're going to confine it just to using Git repositories. You can't use TFVC or Subversion or some other thing. And I just, part of me almost rolled my eyes when I read all that. I'm like, really? Like, we need another ops? Like, it's infrastructure as code. And just because you're confining it to only use Git-based repositories, to me, was just like, all right. I mean, I just shrugged it off because I've already been doing infrastructure as code as part of my DevOps pipelines, because I think infrastructure as code is one of the unsung heroes of DevOps best practices. And I was a late bloomer to that. I wasn't a big believer because I started my career at Compaq Computers. I remember deploying my software on ProLiant servers that were the same configuration a year later that they were the first time I deployed to them. So infrastructure as code and configuration as code didn't really pop for me because I was like, I don't change my infrastructure very often. So why am I going to invest in automation of something that never changes? But then you fast forward to the cloud and you realize, no, Donovan, those environments change all the time potentially. And you're going to want the ability to tear down an environment and spin it back up again, like your dev and your QA environments that don't need to live forever. Then all of a sudden that light bulb comes on, wow, infrastructure as code is really, really powerful. And then you start talking about disaster recovery. Because if I have this script, this automation that I can use to stand up another version of my environment somewhere else in the world when a catastrophic failure happens, like no longer is it a all hands on deck. No longer are we ordering in takeout and everyone's in the war room trying to figure out how to get our services back up. It's just like, hey, everyone, go back to sleep. I'm just going to push this button and we're going to stand up another one. All right. And we'll go back to sleep. And that's when the light came on for infrastructure as code. So when I started reading about all this GitOps stuff, I'm thinking, this just sounds like the things I've been doing already. And I even found some articles that compared the two of them or talked about what is GitOps versus infrastructure as code. And even then I was having a hard time saying I haven't been already doing this stuff. Call it whatever you want. I think infrastructure as code is a very important DevOps best practice, one that people should be employing as quickly as they possibly can. If you want to call it GitOps, great, but don't confuse yourself thinking that GitOps is one thing and then DevOps is another. You should be doing infrastructure as code in your pipeline that you're deploying your applications with. I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, that's really good. Another nice, clear answer. I liked it.
Good.
Okay, Mickey Gowsett, who I think you may know,
Yep.
what is the next big thing after DevOps? What's the next big catchphrase or idea? And the reason I think you're being asked this is because you're one of your big claims to fame was popularizing the rub a little DevOps on it.
Right.
Concept, right? So I think everybody wants to know, what do you think is going to be the next big thing?
That's funny because I didn't even know that was going to be a big thing. It just, I remember the first time I ever said that, I was sent to a customer to prove to them that we could build their Gradle scripts, these big giant Gradle scripts using VSTS at the time. And they didn't think that we could do it because they were a Java shop and Microsoft doesn't have this reputation for Java, especially at the time that I did this back in, I think it was 2015 when I was there. And I'm in this war room and every time they brought up what they thought was a challenge, I'm in there and I have my peers with me and we just would solve the problem immediately or write a custom task and just showing how flexible the tool was. And then they came up with another one. I just said, hey, we're just going to rub a little DevOps on this. This problem's going to go away. And everyone in the room laughed. And I thought, oh, wait, I'm going to store that one away. Maybe I'll be able to use that sometime because I didn't expect that reaction. 2016, I get the keynote build. And that's the first time I ever said it out loud to a public audience. I said, you remember that application you just saw in the last demo? We're going to rub a little DevOps on it and make it better. And the next thing I know, it's all over Twitter. And people
Exactly.
are expecting me to say it. Some people hated it. Some people thought it was hilarious. And I remember there was a fun story where one of the people who really, really hated it, I met him in England. And he was just giving me this hard time. He'd already attacked me on Twitter. We were having fun with it though. And then he came to a meetup that I had that night and I didn't say it. And he was just furious. I'm like, dude, you hated it anyway. And I didn't say it. And you're like, well, how did you not say it? You say it all the time. And I thought, oh my goodness, this has gotten way out of control. There's been news articles written over that phrase. It's just been nuts. So what will be next? I have no idea because I didn't even know that was going to be a thing. That it just seems to happen. And I've noticed that when I'm on stage, what people pick up on is not what I expected them to pick up on because I rehearse everything that you see. I've said
I'm
all
sure.
those lines hundreds of times. And I kind of in my mind think, okay, that's going to land there. And I'm usually pretty good. The jokes pretty much land. I'm like, this is going to trend. And it never does. Like, how did that not trend? I orchestrated that to happen and nothing. And then all of a sudden they picked up on something else I said or did. Or there's a meme of me kind of dancing around because I said warm and fuzzy once and I kind of pantomimed it. And all of a sudden that became a GIF, right? And they're like, oh my goodness, that's what you latched on to, but not this other thing. So,
I
one of the
know.
things I've been saying a lot, though, that might catch on, I haven't actually been saying it. I picked it up from my buddy Mark Fussell, who's on my team now. He uses the term dapperize a lot, which is funny because you want to talk about dapper, and we'll get to that. But to dapperize an application is, first of all, very easy to do, and you get a lot of free stuff just by running your app in the context of Dapper, you get traceability, you get observability, you get security, and it's all a lot of cool stuff. And he calls it to Dapperize your application. And another thing that we've been saying is that Dapper does that. And it became a hashtag during a show I was recording where I didn't even realize that I was saying it a lot. All right. Dapper does that. I don't have to worry about that because Dapper does that. Next thing I know, I look up and there's a hashtag Dapper does that. I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. So nice. I think there might be some Dapper specific trends coming up. But to answer the first part, so that one of them is what's the next trend or what's the next catchphrase? I think Dapper is going to have something to do with that. If I'm right, but I'm probably not. So it's probably going to be something I'm not even thinking about that's going to take off. The other thing was, what's going to be the next big thing after DevOps, or where does DevOps go? And I think a lot about this question still, even though DevOps isn't my primary focus, because when it was my primary focus, you're constantly thinking about what's going to be next. And what I kept telling people is I hope there's nothing next, because I've been writing software since 96. I joined Compact Computers in 96. And I remember setting up a CI system was only the brightest on your team could do that, because you had to make files and you had to figure out how to trigger the CI system whenever a commit happened, and we weren't using Git or essentially you had to be really, really smart to set up a CI system. And today it's a checkbox. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go anywhere and click a checkbox or add a value to a YAML file and you get CI automatically. Nobody thinks about it. It's not a big deal. What I hope is that DevOps goes that way, to where DevOps is literally a checkbox or a value that I check set somewhere, and I don't think about the infrastructure as code, the security that I have to apply, how am I going to deploy the application. I want all that taken away from the developer. I wanted the developer to say, here are my files, here's the URL I want to access those files from, Azure take care of the rest. I don't want to know if it's going to AKS or Azure App Service or to Azure Functions or static web apps. I don't care. Like, honestly, as a developer, I really don't care. I just want my app to show up when I type in donovanbrown.com. Go make that happen. So nice. What I'm hoping is that DevOps goes that way, right? It's just, we don't think about it anymore. We just hand Azure our files and our URL, and 5 minutes later, our app is running. And if Azure decides it needs to move it from static web apps to app service or from app service to Kubernetes, great. Go ahead, Azure. Do what you got to do to make sure that my customers get the best experience that they can. I really don't care. So I hope their DevOps is not what we're talking about 10 years from now.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I get your point. There are certain concepts you're like, it can't just go away or be replaced. It just has to become a natural part of the whole way you operate, right?
Absolutely, because CI didn't go away. We just made it so easy that no one cares about it anymore. No one talks about it anymore. I shouldn't say we don't care about it. We care about it because it is an extremely integral and important part of your CI/CD pipeline, but it's just not something that you're losing a lot of sleep over, because setting up CI has become so simple to do, and I want DevOps to be that simple to do. We still have a long ways to go, but I think it's clearly possible, because we're getting these patterns, we're getting these systems that work over and over again. We're getting down to containers, which becomes that one unit of distribution, which makes things a lot simpler for us to go off and automate in a very consistent way. So I think in the future, DevOps isn't as popular as it is right now, and we're going to be talking about something else, and DevOps will go the way of CI.
Okay. So we've danced around this long enough. I'm ready to take the bull by the horns. Let's talk about Dapper. Okay. Dapper, distributed application runtime. Now, here's your challenge for me. Explain in plain English to somebody who's, say, an IT pro, why this is important, what it is, and why they should be thinking about it. But keep it succinct and keep it like kind of high level so that even a journalist like me can understand it.
Okay. Challenge accepted. Let me see if I can do this for you. I'm going to give you a little bit of an anecdote first, and maybe that'll help tie it together. I've been a developer for a really long time. Distributed applications are very difficult to write. And one of the reasons that they're difficult to write are there are so many moving pieces. You have to worry about how you call other services. How do you find out where they are and what their names are? What if there's 10 of them? Which one of those do I call? What if I'm calling it too often? How do I back off and know how to back off? What if my first call fails and I need to try again? What's that retry logic look like? That's a lot of code that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. And if I want to connect to something like Redis Cache, I now have to download their SDK, have to learn their API. But what if tomorrow we switch from Redis Cache to Azure Cosmos DB? Well, that's another SDK I have to download and another API I have to learn and code I have to change because it no longer points to Redis, it now points to something else. And that's just one example of just where I want to store state. You have to multiply that by service discovery, secrets management, input and output bindings. All those things come with their own tax of SDKs you have to download, dependencies you have to have, and code you have to write. But what if I were to tell you there is a world where you don't have to write that code, you don't have to learn those APIs, and you don't have to download those SDKs, but you have the exact same power you had before? That's Dapper. Dapper is that piece that you rely upon that understands how to talk to Redis and also understands how to talk to Cosmos DB so that I don't have to know how to talk to those things. I say, hey, okay, Dapper, I need you to store this for me. I'm going to ask for it later. So, okay, no problem. I'll store it for you. Whenever you want it, just ask for your dog's name and I'll give you your dog's name back. Might be stored in Redis cache, might be stored in Azure Storage, might be stored in Cosmos DB, might be stored in AWS, might be stored in GCP. I don't know, nor do I care, but I know that when I ask for that secret, I'm going to get it back. When I ask for that state, I'm going to get it back. There was an app that I've been demoing quite a bit where I actually take in tweets from Twitter and I take the text and I send it to to Cognitive Services to get the text analyzed and tell me if it's sentiment analysis. I didn't have to write a single line of code that understands the API from Twitter. I didn't have to download any SDKs for Twitter. I just said, hey, Dapper, whenever you get a tweet that looks like this, call me, please. And Dapper's like, no problem. And next thing you know, all these tweets just come funneling into my code. And all I wrote was, I think, 12 lines of code that said, once I get a tweet, do this with the tweet. So Dapper makes writing microservices easy because it takes away all of the heavy lifting that an engineer would normally have to do. And it also reduces the amount of code you have to change. So let's say on my local machine, I'm running against Redis cache because it's convenient, but then I'm going to be running against, I don't know, Cosmos DB in the cloud. I don't have to change any of my code. I just change my configuration and it just runs there. So to me, in a nutshell, Dapper makes writing microservices easy because it does all the heavy lifting for you.
That's good. Where does it sit? Like if somebody wants to use Dapper, where is it?
No, that's a good point. So Dapper, when you're running inside of a Kubernetes cluster, is a sidecar. So a sidecar is another basically container running right next to your container in the same pod. So you just communicate with Dapper and Dapper does all of the translations of communicating to everything else for you. So it's just a sidecar, but it doesn't only run inside of Kubernetes. You can actually run Dapper locally on a VM. If you're still on-prem and you have systems that need to communicate with each other or store state or get secrets, you can still use Dapper. And it just runs as a process right next to your application on the same VM as well.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, Mickey also wanted me to ask you about air hockey and racing cars. But I'm like, you know what? Those are two topics I know even less about than I know about Dapper. So I don't know even what I would ask you. I have heard you're really big into car racing though.
Yes, back in 97, I bought a BMW M3, which is a very, very fast car. And a friend of mine convinced me that I should autocross it. And autocrossing is where you're the only person on the track at a time. So it's not wheel to wheel racing and you're timed against a clock. And everyone has to drive the exact same course, and the person who drives it fastest without any penalties obviously wins. And I tried it and was just amazed by the vehicle that I had purchased, because when you're driving it on the street, you really don't understand all the engineering that you purchased. But when you track a car, you start to really appreciate how amazing they are. And I obviously, being a software engineer, figured out a way to create a registration system for people who wanted to race their cars and turned it into a business that I ran for about 20 years. But it also was a cool way to race my car, because I was getting paid to race my car. I felt like a professional driver because I was sponsored by the website that was about racing cars. And I raced all over the United States at the national level, which was a lot of fun. So I still race every once in a while, not near as much as since COVID hit, I haven't raced. But now that I'm fully vaccinated, I think I'm gonna start to venture out and track my cars again. And then I did the same thing with air hockey. Abel Wang is my best friend, and he and I played air hockey a lot. And thought we had to be the best two air hockey players in the world. I mean, we had to be, because we played hundreds of games. There's no way anyone plays air hockey as well as we do. So we started searching on the internet for if anyone else played air hockey like we did. And lo and behold, 2 weeks out from the day we started searching was the Texas State tournament in Dallas, Texas. I think it was 2007 when this happened. And I'm like, Abel, man, we got to go to this tournament and teach these people how to play air hockey. This will be awesome. And unfortunately, Abel couldn't go, but I could go. So I flew to Dallas and I show up at the hotel. There's players from all over the country there. And I remember a gentleman comes up and says, "You want to play?" I'm like, "Of course I want to play." I'm like, "This is awesome. Finally get to teach these people how to play air hockey." I get on the table. The game lasts probably 30 seconds. I don't score a single point. This guy is doing things I've never seen before, things I didn't know you were allowed to do on an air hockey table. And all I remember doing is picking up my phone and texting Abel, "We suck." He's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Dude, we are horrible at this game. These people are amazing." And I've been hooked ever since. So again, created a website, created an app that scores them so we could broadcast the matches from my house over the internet, and was ranked 11 in the world at one point.
Wow, really? Interesting.
Yes, that was my best finish ever. And it was a finish where my wife and I went to Denver for the World Championships that year, and I just went to support the community because I wasn't in practice. I hadn't been training, and I was just like, "Let's just go have fun. Let's just go support the community." So we flew to Denver, and not taking it as serious, I ended up 11th in the world. And the reason I think I ended up 11th and not 10th is because when I went to the 11-10 spinoff, I started taking it seriously, thinking, "Oh man, I'll be in the top 10 player in the world." And I took it so seriously, I psyched myself out and I lost. And it's just interesting where you just do it for fun. I ended up playing better than I had when I was taking it way too serious.
I wonder if that has implications for developers. I bet it does a
I
little
think
bit.
so as well, because most of the developers will tell you the ideas and the solutions don't come when you're sitting in front of the computer. They come when you're falling asleep or when you're waking up or when you're doing something else. And then you have to run back to the computer to get that thought out of your head. But sometimes if you look at it for too long, you can't see that one semicolon that's missing, or that one logical, like that one line, and it's usually one line or one character that's wrong that's been blocking you for the last day and a half. And you won't see it when you're staring at it and you're just focused on it and determined. Sometimes you just have to turn your brain off, go watch Nacho Libre and laugh at stupidness, and then come back and the answer will be right in front of you.
Exactly. All right, we're running out of time here. I want to sneak in one more question. I know you spoke at Build this week, and one of the sessions you spoke on, I'm very interested in. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to. It's called Running Open Source Applications Your Way on Azure. And I'm wondering if there are any bits from that that you think would be important for IT pros to know, like a key takeaway or two from that session that you can kind of summarize here for IT pros?
It's interesting that you qualified it as IT pros, because I think what I'm about to share, everyone needs to know. It doesn't matter if you're a developer, an IT pro, or PM. If you're working in an organization, I think you need to understand that at Microsoft, we can support you with your Java workloads. People don't associate Microsoft and Java, but they don't realize that LinkedIn has, I think, 100, what is it, 1800 microservices running Java right now. Minecraft uses Java. I think we have Java in Azure itself. We also have Java in other places inside of Microsoft. So we have a vested interest in making sure that Java runs well in Azure. And we have a lot of experience running large enterprise workloads that are written in Java in Azure. And we can help our customers with that as well. So that's a message that I hope people take away from that session, is that we're not just here to help you with .NET. We can help you with any language that you're writing. It doesn't matter if it's Go or Java. We have a lot of investments to make sure that any code that you write runs really effectively inside of Azure. So that open source session is about, doesn't matter what language you program in, doesn't matter what open source databases you use, doesn't matter if you're running on Linux or Windows. Here at Microsoft, we're here to help everyone be more effective with their job, be it a citizen developer, which is a low code, no code type of developer, a pro developer that's writing really low level microservices, doing proper infrastructure as code for your Spring Boot applications. Doesn't matter what hat you wear in your organization, if you want to run open source in Azure, we're here for you.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm definitely going to watch this now. That sounds really good. Donovan, thank you so much, especially doing this at the end of a super busy week. Really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.
And for everyone else who's listening right now to this or reading the transcript, I'll be putting up information soon about who my next guest is going to be. And once you see that, you can submit questions directly on Twitter, like people did for Donovan all week this week, using the hashtag MJFChat. In the meantime, if you know of anyone else or even yourself who might make a good guest for one of these chats, please do not hesitate to let me know and drop me a note. Thank you very much.